Hallo, wir sind
Mahia Nikubin
und Vanessa Rau und im Rahmen der Tagung Ein Jahrhundert Religionsverfassungsrecht, Säkularität und Gesellschaft im Wandel haben wir Interviews mit den Keynote-Speakers geführt, unter anderem mit dem Religionssoziologen José Casanova.
José Casanova, you are a sociologist based in the US, originally from Spain. You studied sociology and Catholic theology and philosophy, by the way. What's your relationship to the topic secularity, religion, etc.?
Well, when I studied theology in Innsbruck, and it was not only Catholic theology, I studied a lot of Evangelische Theologie. It was the time when everything was thinkable within the Catholic Church after the Council. So at the time, however, the theologians themselves were accepting the theory of secularization, took it for granted. It was the time of the secular city, God is dead theology. So then when I went to study to the United States, like every European, I was confronted with the fact that the United States, a very modern society, a very religious society, how can you explain that? It took me a long, long time. So I had to reflect a lot. Because the thesis of secularization, I learned it not through sociology, I learned it through theology. And so then it has to be even more necessary for me to rethink everything. And this allowed me, this combination of factors allowed me to rethink. Also happened to marry a Ukrainian American who actually I met in Innsbruck in German. And through her, I also learned the Polish-Slavic connection. And this gave me the possibility of seeing the very many different forms of modern societies, Spain, Germany, Austria, Poland, the United States. And so this gives you the possibility of really comparing those dynamics and trying to understand how different those dynamics are in different places.
And speaking about difference, what do we understand today when we refer to secularity or the secular?
It's a very complex question because there was a famous sociologist, David Martin, who said the secular is such a complex concept that means so many contradictory things that we should get rid of it. But it's impossible because the same thing, religion and the secular are two modern concepts around which we construct reality. They are modern concepts, but they're crucial for understanding. So we cannot eliminate them, but we have reflexively to think, what do they mean? Originally, it was a Christian theological category from Augustine. And we had the religious priest, the monks, and the secular priest. The priests that live in the world were the secular priests, right? So originally, it was not the other of religious. It was secular meant simply to live in the world, not in the monastery, right? Then came the Protestant Reformation. There was desecularization, right? The secularization of monasteries, of monks. And so there was a moment of moving away from the monastery towards the world. But then there is a third meaning added, meaning without religion. And this is, perhaps if we go back to Hugo Grotius, when he tried to establish an international law in the midst of religious conflicts, where each European nation was confessional, but they had to have an international law that was neither Catholic, nor Protestant, nor Calvinist, nor Lutheran. And so he said it has to be a law etsi Deus non daretur, as if God would not exist. And this is what Charles Taylor has called the immanent frame. All our modern structures, the modern state, the modern capitalist economy, modern science, modern culture, media, all of them function as if God would not exist. Therefore, that's what secular means. A space in which the hypothesis of God does not enter. But doesn't mean a space without religious people, because religious people have also the possibility of entering this space. So the secular is this empty space, emptied from religion, but where everybody can enter and participate in conversation.
In your work and in your research, you're highlighting the relevance of religion in the public sphere, and you're well known for challenging the secularization thesis. So what do you challenge specifically? What is your take on this?
It was a challenge from within. I was very much influenced by Jürgen Habermas and the thesis of Struktur wandelnder Öffentlichkeit. So I took very seriously this notion of a public sphere where citizens come to deliberate about the common good, about the res publica, right? The public things. But for Habermas, this public sphere was too much a secularized, free from religion. And for me, and I begin my book with, look at 1789. You have the Islamic Revolution in Iran. You have the visit of the Pope Wojtyla to Poland that leads to solidarity to the end of the Soviet Union. You have the rise of the moral majority in the United States in the election of Ronald Reagan. You have the Nicaraguan Revolution as an outcome of liberation theology. All of four things happened in 1979. It was clear that empirically, as a fact, it is not true that religion becomes a private affair. Religion is becoming a very serious public event, which even can transform whole societies. It's a revolutionary force. But it's not only empirically, because the way people were responding, well, it's a fundamentalism. It's a reaction against modernity. And I said, not necessarily. Religion entering the public sphere can actually enliven the public sphere, can enliven the democratic society. It's happening with solidarity. It's happened precisely, even in the United States, I argue. So the question is not whether religion should enter the public sphere, but of course, which kind of religion and what are the consequences. So it's not religion per se, but different religions can have different roles in the public sphere, some positive, some negatives.
And today at our conference, we're here to think about the German secular arrangements, the Religionsverfassungsrecht. And how do you see that law in relationship, or the challenges in relationship to religious freedom and the sort of... yes, sort of the jurisprudence of the state.
Right. I have not studied myself so much the constitutional German context, but I am aware. I mean, the Weimar Constitution was a model for the Spanish Constitution, many countries. So on paper, it was a beautiful constitution, but we see that in reality, it was a failure politically because of the way in which people responded to this context. So on the one hand, there is a recognition of religious freedom, but more as a type of individual religious freedom. And then the question is, however, how to recognize the existing religious communities. And we see that especially, it is precisely after World War II, the new constitution, which enshrines the sacred dignity of the human person, and we know the Beckenförde thesis and the complexity, the fact that the liberal state cannot ground its own principles. So there is a fundamental tension precisely between a state that ought to be neutral, that should not have precisely any particular, if you wish, ideology other than the defense of these fundamental ethical principles of defending the rights of every citizen, of every human being. In this context, of course, you have the dynamic of greater pluralization of German society. It was the Evangelische Kirche, the Katholische Kirche, right? But now you have the Jewish communities coming back, the Muslim immigrants, many other religious groups. And so we have now a new situation in which, on the one hand, we have to maintain the fundamental principle of religious freedom for each and every citizen, individuals, freedom and freedom of conscience, also the freedom not to believe, right? But also we have to create conditions of possibility for all religious communities to be able to function freely, but also to enter the public sphere in their own way. And of course, we cannot have a single model because those are very different types of religious communities. So the question is, how to create a pragmatic context of recognition in which precisely all religious communities are recognized by the state as part of society, of entering the public sphere, but also there has to be a process from within, from civil society, where the different religious communities and secular groups recognize each other in equality and in freedom in our democratic public sphere.
So in light of what you're mentioning, how can we deal with rising right-wing populism and a much more diffuse political world order that we observe today?
On the one hand, obviously, we see that this is a general global problem. is a response against, on the one hand, a crisis produced by what we see, a process of globalization that threaten collective identities. But for me, what is surprising in Europe is that we created the European Union precisely to overcome the model that for 100 years, the Westphalian model of balance of power, countries fighting against one another forever. I mean, let's remember that France and Germany were at war for 70 years, from 1870 to 1945. Others at war are preparing for war. And the European Union was an attempt to overcome precisely the war between European nations, but also the old conflict between Protestants and Catholics. For the first time, there were new Christian Democraten Parteien in Holland, in Germany, where Protestants and Catholics for the first time were together. So it is based on the reconciliation between France and Germany and the reconciliation between Catholics and Protestants that was the foundation of the European Union. And originally, it was a Catholic project. There were no Protestant countries joining the European Union. There were no socialist parties supporting it. Eventually, it was enlarged, and it became a social democratic project. Unfortunately, both projects are now dead. The Christian democratic project and the social democratic are in crisis. And we have no substitute. We have now a club of rich countries that when it comes to a political crisis, then solidarity ends. And this is, of course, for me, the crisis, the return of populist parties that at first were against Islam, but then came the financial crisis, they were against the southern countries because they are not hardworking and we work hard and they take the money away from us. And now these populist parties were first anti-Muslim, then anti-Southern. Now they are anti-European Union, anti-immigration. So we have to really understand these dynamics to understand what the problem and the possible ways of overcoming it. But it's very important we have memories. Memories of how first the long centuries of wars between religious groups, between nations, then the very successful construction of the European Union that for the first time created the conditions for a Europe. It's unthinkable how well European societies have lived in the last 50 years. And now we should not throw it away and we should, but we must understand the problem of immigration is a great global problem and we have to find ways of regulating it, of making it, organizing in such a way that the sending countries, the transmitting countries and the receiving countries, all of them participate in a transnational, international solution. So we have to deal with very serious global issues, and we cannot deal with it country by country. It has to be a collective project. And so this issue is the only way to basically respond to the populists, to make clear that there is the nationalist populist solution to these problems is not a solution. They only show the crisis and they need to do something. Yes.
And what do you think, what's the contribution of science or academia in this context?
The most important for me is my function, I see it, is not so much science. I don't think that sociology should input so much the emphasis on science, but reflexivity, remembering history, looking how complex those issues are, but complex in a way that they are complex because moral problems are always complex. Not complex in the sense they have no solution, but precisely we have to clarify this complexity in a way that it becomes understandable. The function of social science is to is self-understanding. It's a form, if you wish, of human collective self-understanding. We cannot all do it. Some of us do it professionally, but it should not be for the sake of building science, but for the sake precisely of helping us understand better. And this is the function, I think, of the social science, to offer a theory of the present with a practical intention of helping ourselves, the actors, the agents in society, understand how do we act. Science cannot tell us what to do, but can help us understand the complex context of where we have to act.
So then what would be the role of religion in the public sphere, or maybe as a system of knowledge and practice in that whole?
Well, religious communities, I mean, usually religion has had always through history two different roles in tension. One is integration, social integration, and this leads to uniformity and leads to conservative resistance. And the other is a prophetic critique of power, of what is considered sacred. So it can either sacralize society, sacralize whatever, the nation, sacralize the community, or it can be a prophetic voice that opens up the community. I think that the most important issue today is recognition of the irremediable religious pluralism. It's not religion in the singular. Many different religious communities, they may have different attitudes, different perspectives, and it is in this process of interreligious dialogue and interreligious secular dialogue and recognition that the possibility really of solving our problems will come.
José Casanova, thank you so much for your thoughts and your contributions to this conference, but also to this conversation.